Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, and welcome to the PreparedX Podcast. This is our 50th edition. I'm super proud and happy that we've got to 50 episodes of our podcast, and I hope you've all enjoyed them. It's been a pleasure up until now, and we look forward to the next 50. I want to thank my team before we start this podcast. So thanks to the ongoing support from Mike and Jenny and the rest of the team, as well as all you listeners, as well as all those that have participated in the interviews throughout the last period of time. Again, our 50th edition today, so super excited. Just before we do get going, also, if you can rate us on iTunes, please do that. We'd love to hear from you as well. At the bottom of this post, if you're listening to this through our website or the other outlets, please make a comment or rate us. We'd really appreciate that. So here we go. Our 50th podcast is with Ashley Barker. And Ashley is a friend of mine, actually, as well as a former colleague when I was in the British Army a number of years ago. Ash served actually for 23 years in total, specialized in counterterrorism around the world, working for a number of clandestine organizations, and more recently, in the last 6 or 7 years, has been advising public and private sectors on how best to protect their assets. So we're talking asset protection today in this interview, and I think you'll find it very interesting. Without any further ado, here's episode 50 of the PreparedX podcast and my interview with Ashley Barker. Good morning, Ashley. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks, Rob.
Just before we get started with the podcast, could you just for a few minutes talk to our listeners and let them know a little bit about your career to date, please?
Yes, not a problem. Hello. My name's Ashley Barker, and I'm the Managing Director of Final Phase Limited. We offer advice to a wide range of clients on asset protection, risk management, and security architecture. My background, I've served 23 years with the British military, 13 of which was spent in counterterrorism. And since 2011, I've been advising a wide range of clients on how to best protect their assets, ranging from maritime to nuclear, rail and transport, and also it's been including the private high net worth individuals, all using the latest methodology, tactics and techniques. So that's what I've been up to, Rob.
Great. Okay, so this is going to be a really interesting topic to many of our listeners, especially those that are really concerned about protecting assets within any organization or, you know, some of the senior leader folks who may be, you know, high net worth individuals. So I think this is going to be well received. So just as we get going then for our listeners, can you explain how asset protection may have changed over the last 10 to 15 years?
Yeah, you can appreciate it, and so can your listeners, Rob, that everything's really changed in our sector over the last 10 or 15 years. How organizations really need to identify their assets have now become, you know, a truly realistic threat. As we've seen on all the media, really, as the threat has changed, you know, the risks to airports, transport systems, even music and sporting venues, it's dramatically increased. Just alone in the UK over the last 15 years, without talking about any other country, we've gone from, you know, potential rising attacks on the British Underground, to the 7/7 bombings, to the car bombing of the Glasgow airport, to the suicide bombing of the Manchester music concert, which is the first anniversary today, and more recently to the knife attacks on the London Bridge. And that's just talking about the physical threats which we've had to overcome against our assets, even before we started talking about the cyber, which is obviously in all the media at the moment. Really, it's now changing down to the asset owner really needs to identify their assets and how best to protect them. And along paralleling that, Rob, really, which is mainly all to do with commercial, which I've just spoken about. On the flip side of that, you now have, you know, private high net worth individuals being targeted purely because the threats against these individuals have changed considerably.
Sure. And there's a lot, so much information out there now, so they're much easier to track, you know, with social media, especially if some of them, you know, are on those platforms or their organizations are on those platforms. So I'm sure, you know, in terms of targeting these individuals, it's gotten a lot easier for those that wishing to, you know, do harm. So in terms of impact, what has been the impact on organizations and individuals with all this increase of these various challenges and risks?
I would say the main thing, without being too crude, is cost to the commercial organizations has been vast. Purely, if we'd like to, you know, probably the easiest way, Rob, is to break it down into three groupings. Really, in the commercial organizations, you've got group one, which probably the critical and the government organizations, which will be heavily regulated now in the last 15 years, which has totally changed. Now these organizations haven't really got a choice. They have to, you know, put in the correct standards, which will be dictated to by probably government regulations. How this impacts them is obviously, you know, a huge cost, because these are probably the most critical, vulnerable establishments, which are probably the greatest risks. Now, being at the greatest risks, just by, you know, for example, taking nuclear, if a successful attack happened against a nuclear establishment, you can appreciate the outcome. So these obviously have to be heavily defended, which obviously comes out with a great cost as well. For example, you know, just for your listeners, the US Embassy in London. The US Embassy in London used to be in the heart of London. Now, with the evolving threats over the last 10 or 15 years, it's now been moved totally outside of London, purely because where it was in the historic location, it couldn't defend itself against vehicle-borne IEDs or, you know, suicide bombers or the threats of today. That's how things have changed.
Sure.
So on these organizations have got a great burden, to be honest, and mainly it is financial and basically complying with government regulations. The second group would be your commercial organizations, which don't have to comply, but these have still got a duty of care to their employees and also the protection of their own assets. Now, you can appreciate, you know, if they don't do anything and a successful attack happened against these commercial organizations, this could be just their, you know, stocks and shares, and, you know, it could be the destruction of their own company, even if it wasn't fully successful. Now, these organizations do still hold a duty of care for their employees, and a responsible organization will still take this very seriously. So although they don't have to comply with the regulations, they will take the regulations as a guideline, which is more and more common this day and age. And then the third group is basically everybody else, which either, you know, decides if they are a risk or if they're not, and how much they do to protect their risk is purely down to the individual. Within this grouping, as you've mentioned before, Rob, is the high net worth individual, which, you know, aside totally from the opposite side of the spectrum from the commercial, the high net worth individual has the risks against this grouping has dramatically increased in the last 15 years. And to be honest, this is more to do with organized crime than terrorism. But organized crime has totally evolved in the last 15 years against this grouping of individuals and really used them as an easy target.
Sure. In terms of the advice that you provide to your clients, how would you, you know, based on some of these increased risks over the last 10 to 15 years that you've mentioned, what do you do to advise your clients in terms of helping them prepare for these events?
We specialize in fully understanding the client's position and the the assets the client holds. Because if you can't understand where the client sits and the restrictions, what the client holds, and also the threats against their assets and how valuable their assets are, you're really a non-starter. So we go in and we really do communicate and embed ourselves with the client organization so we can fully understand it. Because as you well know, in your line of work, if you can't understand the client, sure, then you're not off to a very good start. Luckily, through the last 5 years, we use the latest methodology into protecting assets. Now we've managed to gain this through the exposure what we've had with industry over the last 5 or 6 years, and it's all about really understanding the asset, the threats against the asset, and then the realistic risk, Rob, because there's a lot of organisations or a lot of consultants out there which really don't understand the realistic threats. Now, this could, if you don't understand the risks and the realistic risks towards the individual assets, you could go down a very expensive route, which is really, it's not going to solve anything, really.
Right.
And from there, by working with the organisation, identifying the assets, we'd come up with a security plan, really, within every stakeholder within the organisation. And our speciality, we basically come up with a security plan which would meet the requirements to protect those assets. Now, what we also have to do is we have to understand where the organisation sits, like what I said to you before with the groupings. If they come under the government regulations, it is totally different to an organisation that doesn't. So fully understanding where the organisation fits and if it is regulated or not. And also, for those who aren't, 9 times out of 10, they'll only have so much of a budget. And this is where you need to be commercially sound in your advice, because there's no point offering $500,000 worth of systems and protection when the client only has $200,000 to spend.
Sure.
So you really do have to work closely with the client. And that would be really what we're offering. We embed ourselves, we work closely with the clients, and then we come up with a proportionate and an appropriate recommendations. And from there, Rob, we can either advise from a distance, or we can embed ourselves within the project teams and take it forward to completion.
Sure, that makes sense. Easy enough process and cycle to follow there. In terms of businesses embracing the change, what can they do? Because it sounds like this might be something that's new to organizations. So if they're unfamiliar to this process, how can they embrace this change and become less of a target?
The first thing is it sounds straightforward, but it's to get the right advice. Now, if the budget allows, then we would always recommend getting a true expert in to conduct a truly independent threat assessment. Because if you do an internal one, because the budget is low and you send your own security team to do an assessment, sometimes they're not always telling you the truth, purely because they don't really want to tell the management the true vulnerabilities. So I would say recommendation number one would definitely be get a true independent consultant in to do a full threat assessment. And as a company, once that consultant has carried out the threat assessment and produced the findings, is really to embrace it and accept it and don't take it as a critical point against the company, really. The consultant's there to do the job. Once you'd have done the full threat assessment, a realistic threat assessment, after identifying the correct assets and the correct threats and the correct risks, the whole point of it is you work together to basically design out the threat as much as possible. And as I said before, by doing that and by embedding yourselves with the company and embracing the consultants, you can work together when budgets are tight or if you need to do a prolonged project over a number of years, you know, this would really be the direction we'd actually recommend.
Sure. That makes change. Yeah, it makes sense. And sometimes it's tough. You know, we know in our business as well, in terms of embracing something, a different process, you know, with our crisis simulation exercises, if organizations have never been through it the right way, we have the same type of challenges. So, you know, appreciate hearing that from you as it relates to this asset protection. So let's talk about...
Also, Rob.
Yeah, go ahead.
Also on that one, Rob, is... For the organisation, once the initial assessment's been done, and even if the project's been carried out, and you know, it's important for the organisation to actually keep up to date on the latest threats, and because you know, every attack gives us another problem, and with every attack, it might mean that your security plan to your organisation, it might have to change. So it's continuously evolving. It's not just that you can get an asset protection consultant in, you do the review, you do the assessment, you implement the project. It might take a year to implement and you know, complete all the construction and complete all the systems, but that doesn't mean that you just, you know, you sit back on your laurels. You really do have to keep up to date with the threats, and if there's a new threat against your asset, you do have to evolve with it, and that might mean more expense and more design and more changes, you know. So that's always worth keeping at the back of your mind. And then that obviously, Rob, you know, that ties in with, you know, the crisis management, what you offer. So,
sure.
You know, what does happen if you know, a potential attack, you know, is directed towards that organization.
Yeah. Yeah. The programmed approach and then implementing it and then the maintenance is always, you know, one of the biggest challenges, you know, so over time, what we see as well is that, you know, those organizations that want to, you know, keep that program healthy and maintain it. To make sure that they keep up to speed with the latest trends. Those that invest in it, you know, early on and they do it the right way early on often are the ones that will come out the other side, you know, having, you know, a program that's, you know, still viable for years to come. But, you know, some organizations just want to bring the experts in for a period of time, you know, based on different leaderships and their challenges. So anyway, okay, future threats then. Talk to me about the different types of future threats that you see.
Yeah, you and your listeners can appreciate that, you know, it's probably not the best idea to go into too much detail, but I have kind of generalized it because you just don't you know, probably sometimes you don't realize who actually listens to your podcast.
Right.
podcast.
It is open source, but, for sure.
it is. So I'll break them down, Rob. Physical attacks, you know, you take all the intelligence what's happened in the last, definitely the last 5 to 10 years. And with physical attacks, they seem to be becoming simpler. So when you take the suicide bombings from 10 years ago, and then you take the car bombings, and then you look recently, especially most recently with the lone wolves, which the whole globe has to deal with. If you're focusing into the London Bridge attacks, you are really looking at, it's becoming that simple that anyone can hire a van, hire a car, and anyone can get a kitchen knife, which makes it obviously harder for the enforcement agencies to basically track these people. And because they're not going for, especially not in Europe, they're not going for the automatic weapon or the bomb-making equipment or something like that. They can cause havoc just by going to Avis and hiring a van and going to Walmart and collecting a number of knives and walking into a shopping centre or, you know, or a crowded area. I think the future will bring this, this will become more and more common purely because it's so easy to mount. On the physical side as well, instead of concert areas or, you know, shopping areas, they might start branching out onto, you know, infrastructure, and just causing mass havoc by, you know, messing with the transport system or messing with the, or attacking the, you know, the power systems or something like that. So I think that's definitely where the future is going to lie on physical. The other grouping, I suppose, which we're all reading about in the media at the minute, is the cyber, you know, the cyber attacks. And it, on the terrorist side, you know, they are starting to build up their cyber knowledge. But we know on the other countries which target, you know, the West, they have large organizations all potentially targeting, you know, the banking systems, transport systems. We've had the NHS, you know, hacked in the last, you know, 12 months. So cyber is definitely going to be building. So where physical's getting a little bit more basic, I would say, cyber is definitely coming more and more advanced, and cyber will be something which we're all going to have to combat in the future, making our organizations more secure. And especially when there's the threat from cyber of basically tampering with your integrated management systems, you know, within industry, you really do need to think about that's going to be one of the key threats. Within industry in general, the vetting of staff, the recruitment of staff, keeping your eye on staff, you know, insiders, people who get recruited, how somebody who, you know, who you employ could basically damage your company. This is something which Europe and the UK have been looking heavily into into the last 10 years. I think this will be a problem for the future. And then on the private client side, I haven't covered it up to now, but basically the reason why these people have been targeted is because, you know, about 10 or 15 years ago, a new system came in from organized crime, which was basically high intensity, you know, high on violence to the individual, mm-hmm. and a very short amount of time in the property. So with a high net worth individual, you can quite easily, you know, threaten violence to the family, and get a reward and be out of the location rather quickly, rather than the old days where they used to come in and ransack your property for a number of hours when you was out. Now they'll wait for you to be in the property and they'll threaten the family. So this hasn't changed. It's a successful technique. It's been building within Europe and the UK within the last 5 or 10 years. It's actually increased by 70% where, wow. You know, within the UK. And it seems to be a tactic which they're not going to change from. So, you know, there's definitely, you know, a growing threat towards the high net worth individual.
Great. And so as we start to wrap up here, what are your top 3 points, I guess, you know, top advice regarding asset protection?
I would say for any organization or any individual, it's really understanding that there is a risk. It's understanding the asset. So, you know, you could be a millionaire, Rob, and you could appreciate that your family is your asset, or you've got a collection of art, which is your asset. It's basically identifying and recognizing that you do have an asset. And once you have an asset and you understand the threats, then you realize that there is a risk out of that. So, you know, that would be point number one, is really, you know, fully understanding your asset and the risks around that. I would say number two would be, whatever you're going to do, if you're going to try and protect yourself, you know, you would design an achievable security plan. You know, for an organization, there's no point, you know, designing Fort Knox if you haven't got the money to pay for Fort Knox. It has to be also realistic to the threat. There's, you know, and I've seen companies which have spent close to millions on protection when there was no need to, and purely through bad advice.
Sure.
And then lastly, I'd say point number three, Rob, would be always continuously review, you know, review the threats and the risks. And if your assets change, then also your threats and your risk will change as well. So constantly review your position, either personally or within the organization or within, you know, within the local environment, and always, you know, don't sit back, always look forward, always be proactive, you know, don't be reactive.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, that was an excellent episode today. Appreciate your time, Ashley, for joining us from the UK then. Do you have any final comments also for our listeners if they want to get a hold of, contact you and your organization? How can they contact you?
The best email for me is a.barker@finalfave.co.uk. Rob, but I'm sure that if any of your listeners want to get a hold of me, they'll be able to do it by your good self.
Sure. Yeah, and I know you have a profile as well on LinkedIn if people want to take a look at that. We'll also add your bio to the bottom of this in the show notes, so no problem there. Again, thanks for your time today, and we'll be in touch again soon.
Thank you, Rob. Enjoyed it.
Take care. Bye. That wraps up our 50th podcast. If you liked it, please rate us on iTunes. As I mentioned at the beginning, we need that feedback. We want to know if you've enjoyed the 50th episode and other episodes as well. Please take a look at our library. Lots of great content out there. Take a look at our website, preparedx.com, and the podcast section there, and give us your feedback, make comments, and let us know how you've enjoyed the podcast so far. We look forward to 50 more. Until next time, thank you.